Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about education robotics. Like any application in robotics, there's a series of constraints. It might be space, time, being able to get the energy in. And in education, it's got a whole series of other factors like use, depreciation, I've already mentioned safety. There's a whole lot of factors that come in, and often people come up with a solution that what educational robotics will be a small Lego kit, which I give out. It's got safety, it's got the application and the interface with a whole lot of people. But that's one application. There's other ones where there's a central lab and people have robots and they truck into it. And all these solutions have difficulties with it in terms of, say, the Lego parts, keeping control of the parts and the scope of what it can do in terms of a project. There's a sort of a limited section of projects going forward. And then you can, say, have a lab, a robotics lab, which we do have here in Australia, but they're associated with universities, and there's the permission and time to get in to locate them, and they're in the capital city, so people out in the bush don't have necessarily great access to it. I have to apologise for all these birds in the background as I'm talking about this. So what we're going to talk about is, having been in the robotics area, I've set up a small robotics company and exploited things. Looking at the solutions I've brought forward, and you'll see a YouTube from well over 10 years now of an Edubot, which is basically an upturned industrial robot. Of course, they come in at very cheap and very powerful, very dangerous, but if you just put in all the factors and the things necessary, you wind up with the Edubot. So there's a whole series of solutions coming forward, and I'll talk in a later stage about the actual implementation of it, how we can possibly implement it, and obviously the short, sort of almost minor infantry tactics of advancing as an individual in an individual area. You can be sort of held down, or it's nowhere to go. It doesn't mean it can't go forward. There's sort of a big, broader vision, and what happens is that when you're thinking of the broader vision, you come up with solutions which are partly there, and then they sit there for a while. So just quite frankly, the Edubot, which is basic, which you can see if you look at the quick YouTube, is an inverted robot. So you've got the floor space, it's got an expandable safety shield, it's inverted, so you can just wind it through. It can do a whole lot of things a non-inverted robot can do. So it's a robot hanging upside down. It's a industrial robot. So what happens is that your robot you buy possibly may cost $70,000, $40,000, but a car factory robot actually really drops in price. They just depreciate anyway, and the actual robots have required precision and breakdown rate that you can ease it off, and you can actually buy the, or they actually take these robots to the tip. So it is possible to actually marry up with someone. This is the ABB robot, the 2400 series, nice and large and stuff like that. Obviously quite dangerous, so you need the shields around it. And just talking down this path, there's the, you know, the control and the power supply. So you've got one of these things with this wheeling thing. You can wheel it through a school's door, set up a class around it, and get going. The only problem that faced from so many years ago is, how do you deal with the power into it? You know, the power's a major problem, and I can guess that people nowadays will go, I instantly know. But back 15, 10 years ago, this wasn't an obvious answer. And so it's one of these things being sort of sitting in the back burner, in the shelves of things to go out. And you know, sort of like a different methodology of thinking. So at a school, if you can just lob in an industrial robot for a couple of weeks with specialists there and get them to program it. You can actually program these remotely on the internet. You can go on to schools once and actually feed information into them. So you've got the projects and the industrial robot aspect of it going forward. So some of the problems were solved, like how do I get a robot like this into a school and out of a school? So it's got to crouch down and fit through a standard door width. So you measure up the door width, and that's a constraint parameter. But another constraint parameter, which was a bit of a head-scratching thing, is how do you get these running off three-phase power? You can get them running off two-phase power and stuff like that. But then the answer sort of nowadays is obviously, especially say if you want to say deploy this at a fair or something like that, how do you do it? And the answer obviously is batteries. Yeah, Tesla batteries, get a big battery bank for it, and because it's almost ideal for a robotics installation, because the robots are idle most of the time and do only take power in big surges and splurges. And so this is sort of the ideal thing for a battery. So it's one of these technology things which are sitting in the car park, sort of purring away, waiting for a whole series of things to happen. One is a technology environment, several technology solutions to come. Where it can actually do this, as you'll see. Well, let's describe it. So a lot of people may pick up the podcast and not go ahead. So you've got your standard six-axis production line robot in a factory. So Motorman, ABB, they all produce it, all competitively priced. They're cheap as chips, very reliable controllers. And so normally this is, it's got, at the base there's one axis, a big rotation axis, then another axis, which is the sort of similar to your arm axis. There's a rotating ball joint, so 360 degrees, then your forearm and elbow, and a wrist which can rotate and pinch at various different axes. And so just off the top of my head, it's six axes. And so these are the standard ones here. And you have a robot controller. They used to be bigger. I think they're now smaller. And in general, they have a robotics language, which is sort of like a piece of rubbish, basically. Well, I shouldn't say rubbish, but in general, they have an ActiveX controller. So you just, in LabVIEW, pop in the ActiveX controller and just feed it live programs all the time. So rather than delve into the computer, the robot language program, you just map that into LabVIEW language. It takes possibly, a day, a week? Not much time to actually get it completely over into basically Lego Mindstorm. Lego Mindstorms LabVIEW, if you know this, get across. So this is just begging for the use. Now, obviously, the business model is slightly different. So the business model is that you have a private offering of units of school funding, so $500, $1,000, and you aim for that, and you build up a business model which you can sell 10 little mini robots and have a class. This is a different model. This has got capital required to pick up the robot from a warehouse, move it to a school, deploy it, and run a course with it. And so this is more sort of similar to sort of light infantry. You give them small arms and stuff like that, and they can do fantastic things. They can be trained, they can do parade drills, they can all go through graduation ceremonies. This is more light infantry. So like if you have a tank roll into the place, behind that tank is a workshop and a fuel shop and fueling and ammunition, and there's a whole series of it, and that tank operates within a tank troop. So it's sort of like a mechanization. And I think there was a realization that if you do go for a mechanized solution, which is flexible and deployable, you have to actually have command controls. Not so this is like a military stuff, but you've got to have the call centers, the cars to come up and stuff like that. The big benefit is that if you do it well, you can actually link this straight to industry. The industry can say, look, I want this particular problem. A school can work on it for a while as a hero project, and then the industry can have a trial of it. Like, it's sort of like the soft edge of pre-investment that you need in terms of education and stuff like that. It's a different sort of market that you're going through. And this model of sort of the mobile centre. So there's heaps of different educational models that you can have. You can have the technology theme section park that students all come into. You can have this model, which is an intermediate model, which where you have this lob up to a bidder, a school, globally, internationally. So Singapore may ask for it. Somewhere in Beijing may ask for it, somewhere in Berlin or something like that, that may ask for it, and you should be able to lob one of these in, fly it in, and lob it in there, ready to go, especially if it's battery packed and it can be supported by international tutors. I'm sort of thinking sort of future education. At the moment, everyone is thinking short term in terms of their career path, and their. Because they go to so many education ceremonies, that actually sets the way that they think of these things. So this is a mobile robotics thing. Now, I'm not suggesting that this is the go-ahead solution. This solution, what happened to me is that there was a robotics documentary about me, and so I had all these people phone up and from different parts around Australia. And so as I listened to, probably 30, it felt like hundreds of calls, I would say, that's not going to work. So the major thing I was looking at, where this came up, is dairy stuff. Now, dairy, the major thing that people don't tell you about is that cows, when they're milked, like to shit. As it was described to me. So if you've got a robot which is on the floor and it's really hard to clean, it's really hard to hose off because it's covered with cow shit. Apparently, that's one of the things that happens, that the cows do a lot of shit as they get milk. And how do you actually get the cups underneath? Now, you can build bespoke robots for it, but you really need these roof mounted things. There was another people on getting robots to pick passion fruit up in the tropics of Australia. The problem is these are in remote places. It's really hard to get the workers in to do this at the right appropriate time. You know, could we build a robot to do it? And again, having a base, having it, the factory floor, there's no factory floor in a school or a place. It's really difficult. So you've got these things, and you've got the safety aspect of it, and all these sorts of things, which can be done. So this is one path forward. I thought I'd put it out there as sort of a basis for looking at how you go forward. So this is an edubot. Now, there are these things about basically if you want to educate people, what they do is they've already got their arms and hands, and so when they think for solving a problem, they can think of solving a problem with their hands and transferring it onto a robot. It's a little bit more difficult if it's a Lego robot because it's wheels and axes and stuff like that. It doesn't have the pick up and feed up. It doesn't have the actual cooperative class cooperation to solve a problem. It's sort of like it fragments. Now, there is this whole issue that if you fragment people, what will happen is that you will get the top of class doing well, and the bottom of the class, some people will lose or have a low value. So if